Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to Food Integrity Now with Carol Gervais and Matt Spaeth, revealing the truth about the food we eat.
Hello, and welcome to Food Integrity Now, revealing the truth about the food we eat. And I, before we get started here, I'm really excited to have with me today Jeannie Smith. Jeannie Smith has been really kind of part of the Food Integrity Now team since our inception, but more in the background. And Jeannie is going to be on board now as one of the hosts of the show. So welcome, Jeannie.
Hi, well, thank you so much. I'm very glad to be here, and I'm very excited to be doing these shows.
Yeah, and I think she's just going to be a great addition to our team. So please welcome her. And today, I'm really excited about our show. We have Jim Gerritsen. Jim and his wife, Megan, own and operate Wood Prairie Farm in northern Maine and have been doing so for, what, 35 years or so, Jim?
That's right.
Yeah. And Jim is also the president of the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association. And the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association is the lead plaintiff in a lawsuit that was filed in March of 2001 against Monsanto, which is the largest biotech company on the planet and responsible for many of the genetically modified foods that are on the market today. So welcome, Jim.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you and to learn more about the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association and to learn about this lawsuit. So why don't you start us out with telling us a little bit about Asgata. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Well, it depends what corner of the country you're from. Many of us call it Osgata. The acronym stands for Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association. And the organization, it's a four-year-old organization, and we are the trade organization for the organic seed industry. And the primary goals of the organization are to help develop and to protect organic seed. And we look upon organic seed as the very foundation and basis of the organic community, and it's important that the organic seed industry put together high-quality organic seed that's diverse and it's suited to the needs of local organic agriculture. And that's our goal, is to try to develop the industry and protect it from external threat.
Okay, so this is like a national organization. This is not just in Maine, correct?
Correct. We're based in Montrose, Colorado, and we have members in, I don't know how many states, probably members in 20 or 25 states, something like that.
Wonderful. So the reason we have you on the show today is because we were very curious about this lawsuit that you and many others have filed against Monsanto. So do you want to tell us a little bit about how this all got started?
Well, late last winter, we filed an initial lawsuit with 60 plaintiffs, and then on June 1st, we filed an amended amplified complaint with an additional 23 plaintiffs. So our plaintiff group is comprised of 83 plaintiffs, and that includes individual family farmers, independent seed companies, and agricultural organizations. And if you take the memberships of the farm organizations and add them up, there are approximately 300,000 members. And within that membership number, there are several thousand certified organic farmers in both the United States and Canada.
Wow, that's a long list of plaintiffs then.
Well, it represents a broad spectrum, not only within the organic community itself, but also we have other plaintiffs that are non-GMO or non-transgenic farmers. In other words, what maybe at one time would have been called conventional growers, but they want absolutely nothing to do with transgenic agriculture. And transgenes is where you take genes from one species and cross it into another species through the term that is in slang called gene splicing. But transgenic is the scientific usage, and as we go to court against Monsanto, we will be using that scientific usage primarily in court, because that is the precision with which scientists speak, and we want to do everything as clearly as we can in the court process to bring out the truth of what we're dealing with.
So how did the lawsuit get started? What kind of walk us through it?
Well, I think its roots go back 15 years, really. In the mid-1990s, the first commercial introduction of transgenic or GMO crops, those are two words that for all practical purposes are synonyms, but those crops were introduced. The crop that we grow primarily is organic seed potatoes, and it was, I think, in 1995 that transgenic or BT, what Monsanto called their new leaf potatoes, but a gene-spliced potato, were introduced to the market. And in the case of the potatoes, those lasted about 6 years until 2001. And at that time, there was a market rejection of the concept of gene-spliced potatoes, and they have been pulled from the market. And to this day, there are no GMO potatoes in North America.
So were a lot of us eating those potatoes unbeknownst to us?
Yeah, that's one of the inherent problems with transgenic agriculture, is that the federal government has been fairly dysfunctional on the matter, and they've not required mandatory labeling. And what's particularly troubling to us is that when Monsanto, for example, goes to the U.S. Patent Office, they say, we have a new invention here. It's a wonderful thing. It's different. It's miraculous. And we deserve a patent. And then the U.S. Patent Office grants them a patent. And then they go to the Food and Drug Administration, and they say, we have a transgenic crop here that's substantially equivalent to traditional crops, so there's no need for us to have any labeling to inform consumers. And the FDA takes their line, and they accept that. So at the same time, Monsanto, on the one hand, is arguing that their crop is different, and then they'll argue that it's the same. The fact is, they can't have it both ways. It's either different or it's the same, and we contend that it is different and that it should be required to have mandatory labeling, so that a consumer going to shop can decide for themselves whether they want to feed that crop to their family or that product to their family.
Well, we've been talking about this issue quite a bit on our show about the labeling or the lack thereof. So what happened next?
Well, the concern is inherent within transgenic agriculture is that it's a sloppy type of agriculture, and the pollution does not stay on the farm to which the transgenic ag is practiced. For example, contamination can occur in different ways. A common way for contamination to occur is for the pollen from a transgenic crop to become airborne or possibly spread by insect and to go off-site onto farms that are threatened by that contamination. And certainly organic farms fit that model, because in organic production, GMOs or transgenic are not permitted. Within the USDA National Organic Program, there are two separate references that refer to genetically modified organisms as a prohibited method. And the reality within the organic seed industry, of which I am familiar as a seed grower, is that organic seed, which has become contaminated with transgenic pollen, say, has no value in the organic marketplace. The market will not accept GMO seed that has been contaminated. So the need really is for the biotech industry to keep its pollution on their side of the fence. Organic and non-GMO farmers, we have a right to security within our farms, and we have a right to be free from trespass and contamination by the biotech industry.
So what does your, in your petition, I don't know, are you allowed to talk about this? Sometimes in lawsuits, they, you know, you're not allowed to talk.
One of the wonderful things of the great system that our democracy has is that once we're into the legal system, everything becomes public record.
Right.
So the lies that Monsanto has been telling with their high-powered public relations arm, that's going to come to an end once we get to court. They'll be under oath, they'll need to tell the truth, and the record is going to be public. So I look forward to this, and this is as it should be. Part of this exercise is to protect organic farmers. Part of this exercise is to preserve the right to freedom of choice to American and Canadian families so that they can go into the grocery store and with confidence have the right to choose what they want to feed their family. And another is to get the truth out so that the public can understand once and for all just what a bill of goods that we have been sold with transgenic agriculture.
Well, so you have 270, 300 plaintiffs, and who is paying for the defense of this?
Our legal team is pro bono for the plaintiffs, and it is led by Daniel Ravisher, the executive director of the Public Patent Foundation, which is in Manhattan. And the Public Patent Foundation is a nonprofit NGO which has as its primary mission to try to reform the patent system so that it will work in behalf of the public and the people of the United States. And in recent times, kind of in common with other aspects of the economy, there has been undue corporate control of the U.S. Patent Office, and the U.S. Patent Office all too often is operating at the beck and call of the corporations and not representing the public interest.
Why does that not surprise me?
Well, the fact is the U.S. Patent Office, like all federal agencies, they need to obey the law and they need to obey the Constitution, and when they stray from that, they need to be ready for being challenged, and that's what our lawsuit is about. I might mention that there are two primary goals that our lawsuit is seeking to accomplish. The first goal is to challenge the validity of patents. Our patent attorney, Dan Ravisher, and his team have gone over the patents that have been issued to Monsanto for their Roundup Ready transgenic crops. And we believe that the U.S. Patent Office erred in granting these patents, and that, in fact, the patents are invalid because they do not meet the requirements of patent law. When we get to court, we'll be arguing four specific legal arguments. And this gets into some, you know, fairly deep patent law. But one of the basic ones, which I think your listeners would be able to understand, is the requirement in patent law that an invention must demonstrate social utility. And what this means is that there has to be a social good for it. There's an interesting line out of a Supreme Court justice back in 1820 in a patent case made the observation that if someone were to invent a poison that would poison people, that by its very nature is not qualified to be patented. And it's our contention that biotech crops, transgenic crops, fail to meet the social utility requirement of patent law and are therefore invalid, and we will prove that in court.
Wow, that's exciting to hear, quite frankly.
Now, the second goal is we have an incredible situation of injustice going on right now. If an organic farmer or any non-GMO farmer should be contaminated by transgenic pollen, in this case Roundup Ready pollen, and just to make sure that your audience understands what Roundup Ready is, Roundup is the name of a herbicide developed and sold by Monsanto, and they have gene-spliced crops such as soybeans and corn, canola, soybeans and cotton, and these crops are now, through the gene splicing process, they are capable of withstanding the application of the spray, the herbicide Roundup. So they're called, in the jargon is Roundup Ready, in that you can have a big field of corn, say. You spray it with the herbicide Roundup, it will kill the weeds in the field, but it won't kill the crop. And that's what we're challenging specifically, are the Roundup Ready applications. And the vast majority worldwide of all transgenic crops, the vast majority are Roundup Ready crops, herbicide resistant crops. So in a situation where pollen drift, for example, should come off onto a non-target farm and that farmer become contaminated, the view of Monsanto is that farmer is in possession of their technology and they have not paid royalty on it. So not only will that farmer inflict economic loss, say an organic seed grower such as ourselves, one of the crops that we raise on our farm here in northern Maine is seed corn. If our corn should become contaminated by Roundup Ready pollen from a neighboring farm, not only would we lose the value of our crop because organic seed that's contaminated with Roundup Ready pollen and has GMO content in it has no value in the marketplace. So not only do we lose the value of our crop, but the view of Monsanto is that we have their technology, we haven't paid for it, and we would be open to a patent infringement lawsuit for possessing that, even though we had absolutely no desire to have any transgenic part on our farm. We want nothing to do with it. We certainly don't want any contamination. We feel that the polluter should keep their pollution on their side of the fence. Despite all that, Monsanto would view us as an infringer upon their patent and would go after us. So we are seeking protection from the court to protect us from this perverse situation that Monsanto could come after us, and we have to defend ourselves against the very mighty legal department within Monsanto.
Right, and I know that's got to be a huge one with tons of money. I just think it's crazy that they could have somehow gotten that patent to begin with. There's so many variables. I mean, you don't know what the wind's going to do or, you know, what the pollen's going to bring, and yet they got that patent. It just seems crazy to me.
Well, the regulatory process that we have in this country, I would say, is this side of totally dysfunctional.
Right.
When it comes to a biotech crop being reviewed for potential deregulation, and in this case, the agency within the U.S. Department of Agriculture is APHIS, and they have a very strong, obvious bias towards biotech, and it takes little effort for biotech really to get their approval. In fact, the only time that USDA APHIS has ever filled out an environmental impact statement was after farm organizations filed suit forcing them to do so. And when they filed, when they were putting together the environmental impact statement, it came out, they were exposed as having solicited electronic copies of Monsanto's application so that they could cut and paste content from Monsanto's application into the USDA APHIS environmental impact statement. So the relationship between the regulator and the regulated is terribly in conflicted, completely full of conflict of interest. There's this reality of what's called the revolving door, is that individuals will quickly go from working from the regulator, either USDA or the Food and Drug Administration, and then they'll go back to the biotech industry and spend some time there, and then they'll go back from the biotech industry to serving in the regulatory agency. And it's a system that is not benefiting the public. It is not serving the public interest, but the regulators, they are reviewing information provided to them by the manufacturers. They are not doing testing on their own. They are simply doing literature review. And the conflict of interest should be apparent to anyone. If you imagine a manufacturer that invents something new, when they bring it out, they're going to amplify the potential good coming out of their product, and they're going to downplay the negatives in that product. Yet that's the information that our government requires in their analysis of whether they should deregulate a crop and allow it to go commercial and to allow farmers to grow the crop. So we have a system that really is broken, and it needs to be fixed. And our lawsuit is one attempt to bring about correction to the system so that the public interest is properly served.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about this in just a moment. You are listening to Food Integrity Now, and we're going to take a quick break to listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Carol Gravey, and I'm one of the hosts of Food Integrity Now. And I just teamed up with Sharon Farrell of Rocky Mountain Sacred Journeys. And we'd like you to come join us on an amazing adventure of fun and self-discovery. Please join us for one of our ongoing trips to Hawaii to swim with the dolphins in the wild. To find out more about our ongoing trips, please go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or call us at 415-302-7100. Everyone, this is Carol again, and I just wanted to talk to you about one of our new sponsors, Hole in the Wall Herb and Vitamin Shop up in Woodland Park. The owners, Mark and Nancy Duvall, are not only close personal friends, but they're also my nutritional gurus. They are now selling, teaching, and doing Acira bioenergetic testing on their clients. I had this done, and I found out all my food allergies, emotional stressors, environmental sensitivities, hormonal balance, and I received a customized homeopathic remedy. Please call them for more information at 1-800-437-3240.
Hi, and welcome back. You're listening to Food Integrity Now, revealing the truth about the food we eat. And today we're talking with Jim Gerritsen of the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association. And Jim, I have a further question. Your points regarding the dysfunction of the regulatory agencies as it relates to companies who are bringing products online. And we were talking about the cross-contamination and how that is one of the goals of your lawsuit, you along with close to 300 plaintiffs against Monsanto. My question is this the first time that there has been a lawsuit or Monsanto being brought into the court systems regarding cross-contamination? Is there any history, any legal history with this issue?
Well, there are other instances where farmers have tried to battle Monsanto. In most cases, Monsanto delays and drags things out so that the farmers run out of resources with which to make their legal point. There, to my knowledge, has not been a legal action such as we are doing, which is challenging the very validity of the patents. And the significance of this is if you look at the entire business model of Monsanto is based on an aggressive enforcement of basically monopoly control. That's what they're trying to gain within the seed industry is monopoly control. And they're trying to use aggressive enforcement of patent infringement litigation to threaten farmers that should think about holding back seed and planting it, or should do anything that they don't want them to do. And this even extends to researchers. If a researcher wanted to do research on, say, the health effects of a GMO crop, they are required to sign a very lengthy and detailed technology use agreement, which is pretty draconian in nature, very typically, and it often requires the researchers to submit their findings to Monsanto for Monsanto's review before they would be made public. And there was an editorial a year or two ago in one of the science magazines blasting this situation because it just smacks of a lack of scientific integrity to be able to edit and monitor what the scientific community is researching. But there has been a chilling effect within the research community, and there's been an inadequate amount of research done, particularly in the United States. There's been more research done outside of the United States, and sometimes some of the indications of trouble from GMO crops comes from outside the United States.
Yes, as I understand, many of the developed European countries, they already have passed laws requiring any food containing a genetically modified organism that their product be labeled as such, so that the consumer going into their local grocery stores can, you know, turn the package over, look at the ingredients, and it clearly states that it contains GMO, thereby giving them the choice, the power to say whether I choose to consume this or not. Where in our country we have no awareness of what's in the food we eat.
Yeah, my understanding is the same, and I think that really short circuits the proper operation of the democratic system. In a democratic system, we can go to vote once every year, but the fact is, every day we are voting by where we spend our dollars. We should be spending our dollars to support institutions that we think enhances liberty, enhances health, is good for our family, is good for our community, and conversely, deny dollars from going to corporations that are bullies and that threaten farmers and that create a chilling effect within the scientific community. We can't do that if there isn't a requirement for labeling. So that's something that is long overdue, and I think that there is some movement now. I think there is increased pressure. A recent ABC News poll indicated that 93% of the public feels that there should be mandatory GMO labeling. And in this day and age, that is as near a unanimous view as you're ever going to find. So I think the federal government needs to recognize that they work for the people and they need to respond to the people. So I'm hoping that they'll find that they've been wrong and correct it and go back and do the necessary labeling so that people can judge for themselves whether they want to feed this and not be denied that very basic truth that they have a right to know, and that right should be enforced.
You know, Jim, I know that there's a real push to get this on the California ballot in 2012, and I'm hoping that happens and that other states follow suit, because it's just it's crazy. 90% of all the food in the grocery stores basically have some amount of genetically modified ingredient in it, and we do have the right to know.
Some have called this the world's greatest experiment and the world's largest guinea pig project, and I think a lot of Americans are simply not not aware of what the biotech industry in collusion with the government have done. And in the case of Monsanto, they are very lavish with the campaign contributions they spend. Both Republicans and Democrats are beneficiaries of it. There is a long, unhappy history of the revolving door of Monsanto employees coming to work for lead agencies. For example, right now the head of the FDA is Mr. Taylor, and he came right from Monsanto. When I hear of these raids on, you know, the Amish farmer whose farm was raided in Pennsylvania by FDA, I'm thinking they've got one kind of a headache to handle with the big corporate control of the food system, and they really ought to be putting their resources into aiming their agents at where the problem is, and that comes from factory and corporate scale food production, and not at Amish farmers that want to sell unpasteurized raw milk to willing consumers that trust the farmer. And it's just a misplacement of priorities, and it does make one wonder if Michael Taylor, formerly of Monsanto, if he really is the proper person to be in charge of the FDA. It seems to me that he is not representing the public interest, but he is representing the biotechnology interest, and that doesn't cut it for this taxpayer.
Well, I think that those of us at Food Integrity Now agree with you on that. And the real insidious piece of this is, you know, the normal consumer has an assumption that the food that's available to them is healthy and nutritious and good for them. They are blinded by its true content. And in my opinion, it's the greatest hidden danger facing American people today, and they have no clue. And so we clearly agree with you on as the fox guarding the hen house approach with Michael Taylor's going back and forth between the FDA and Monsanto. It's just, and also President Obama, one of his campaign promises was to do something about GMO. And with the election year right around the corner, I don't think he can avoid addressing whether or not he's met his campaign promises.
President Obama is a bright man, and he did make the promise in his run for the presidency 4 years ago. He did promise that we would have mandatory GMO labeling. So I know that there are a lot of forces to bear. I know that Monsanto exerts a lot of influence with their money on the political process, but I'm hoping that the president summons the courage that he needs and fulfills that campaign promise to require mandatory labeling.
Well, I hope so too, Jim, but I doubt it.
I think that this is where it comes back to the constituency, the citizens of the United States, to make our opinions known and our expectations of promises made that they be kept. And this of all years coming up, I think we have the clout knowing that this is a pivotal election. So, but getting back to the actual lawsuit itself, your approach seems different. Your goals seem different than the legal cases that have preceded you, given that you are focusing on the patent itself. But isn't that patent based upon the Supreme Court's recognizing an organism and allowing it to be patented? Am I correct with that, or am I off?
Well, the issue of the patenting of human life goes back to the mid-1980s when the court ruled that this could be done. And in my opinion, that was the beginning of the problem. I think the patenting of life forms was a horrendous error, and I think that there needs to be a correction of that error, and that we need to reverse the allowance of life forms to be patented. In the end, there have been a lot of unexpected consequences from that. I think that there has been a stifling of research, whereas the country was promised that through patenting that would be encouraging greater cooperation among scientists, and in fact it's gone in the opposite direction. But it certainly is an important issue, but the the courts have ruled, and I think they made a mistake, and it needs to be corrected.
Well, the labeling issue, as we know, Clarence Thomas was on the Supreme Court and had some effect on that, and he's a former attorney for Monsanto. So, you know, there's corruption.
Well, Clarence Thomas, Justice Thomas, did not recuse himself when the Roundup Ready alfalfa case became came before the Supreme Court a year and a half ago. And I think that's outrageous. Anyone that has a conflict of interest should not be hearing a case. And for an individual that was a former lawyer at Monsanto, I think it's outrageous for him to not have recused himself and sat out on that case. He brings dishonor to the system of justice that we have in this country when he ignores the basic rules of fairness and justice.
So what point are you in the lawsuit? I mean, are you? What's happening with it?
Well, early on, after we filed, we decided it would be a good idea to try to get as much clarity as we could. So our lawyer sent a letter to Seth Waxman, the former Solicitor General under Bill Clinton, who Monsanto had retained as their lawyer in this case. And I think that signals how important, as much as Monsanto would like to dismiss our effort as insubstantial, and I think they've called it a publicity stunt, and they've tried to denigrate our effort and our concern. The fact that they've hired one of the top lawyers in the United States proves that they are very concerned about the issues involved in this and about the outcome. Well, our lawyer sent a letter to Mr. Waxman asking that they that Monsanto provide to the plaintiffs a legal covenant that would guarantee that Monsanto would not sue the plaintiff farmers for patent infringement. Monsanto refused to provide that legal covenant. And what that means is they are reserving their right to go after innocent family farmers who have been contaminated by their transgenic seed. They are reserving the right to go after those farmers and pursue them for patent infringement. If they were not reserving that right, they should have been happy to have provided us with a legal covenant. So Monsanto may tell us in vague terms that they'll never go after farmers, that they'll claim that they've never gone after farmers, that they're never going to go after farmers. But within their phraseology, they use a couple of terms, inadvertent contamination, unintentional usage of the technology. And these are terms that really, they're so vague as to be to have no legal merit. So we ask them for a simple, legally binding statement protecting our farmers, and they refuse to give it to us. That tells us that they're serious and that their bullying is something that they're not going to give up unless the court forces them to, and that's why we're proceeding to trial. So to answer your question about where the court is, where the court process is, we're now in the pretrial motions. And as I said before, the typical game book, playbook that Monsanto works with is that they try to stall and drag things out. And it's all in an attempt, in our case, it's an attempt to prevent the farmers that are represented in our plaintiff group. It's to prevent our day in court. We are fearful of being contaminated by Monsanto's genes. We are fearful of then incurring a patent infringement lawsuit that could bankrupt our farms in our effort to defend our good names. And we need legal protection from the court. In addition, we feel that after examining the patent law, that the patents that Monsanto is operating from are invalid. And we want the chance to demonstrate to the court what we believe is a very strong position and what our patent lawyer assures us is a very strong position. So Monsanto seems to be fearful of the truth, but what we want is access to the court system to bring out the truth, to make Monsanto answer for the inconsistencies, and I might offer one. Back in mid-July, Monsanto filed a motion to dismiss the case, claiming that we don't have standing and that the case does not have merit. Well, about a month later, we filed our rebuttal. It was a 35-page rebuttal filed by our lawyers, and then there was an additional 110-page rebuttal filed, an amicus brief filed by a couple of lawyers in Texas representing a dozen farmers down that way. And all of these documents, by the way, these are available to the public to view at any time, and it does make for interesting reading. So one can go to the pubpat.org website, or one can go to the osgata.org website. That's osgata.org. And we have, on those websites, we have articles about the various steps of the legal process, and we have links to the actual legal filing so you can read for yourself what I'm about to tell you about. But within about a week after Monsanto filed their initial motion to dismiss in mid-July, they claim that their statement, which they have on their website, is very clear and that they would not go after farmers. The fact that they did not and would not provide us with a legal covenant, that seems to be inconsequential to them. To us, it's very important. But within 1 week of their filing the motion to dismiss, and in that they said that their position is very clear, that they have a statement on their website, and they've been very clear that they're not going to go after farmers and that the statement is clear. They actually went after another farmer in an entirely different case, suing him for patent infringement. And in that, they made the same, the reference to these same, the same wording on their website. They called the wording vague and without any real meaning. So here, in one court case with us, they're saying that their language has been very clear and there should be no confusion. Yet in this other case, 1 week after that motion to dismiss, they're calling that same language that they use vague and having no meaning. So they want it both ways. That's how they have gotten away with the patent office and the U.S. patent office. They want it both ways. So we need this case to get to court so the court can uphold the standard of justice that Americans have come to expect. And to, you know, outside of the courtroom, Monsanto can do anything and say anything. In the courtroom, it's a different matter. So we want this case to get to court. We want the farmers to have their day in court, and we need the protection from the court so that we can run our farms without the threat of invasion, without the threat of trespass, and without that tremendous threat of litigation by Monsanto for patent infringement. The okay. fact is the organic community wants nothing to do with transgenic agriculture. We do not want it on our farms. We do not want it in our feed or our food or our seed. And we most certainly do not want to have to defend ourselves when, through their own recklessness, contamination occurs on our farms.
I understand, Jim, and we agree with you. And we'll continue talking about this in just a moment. But right now we're going to take a break to support our sponsors. You're listening to Food Integrity Now.
My name is Jennifer, and I'm a health fanatic. I admit it. I read all the labels, eat organic food, and I'm very aware of what I put into my body. I practice holistic health, use alternative healing products, and never miss my daily dose of Willard water. Willard water is made with fossilized organics and contains nearly 24 trace minerals that are essential to maintaining strong bones, heart health, and good energy. Simply adding a quarter cap full of Willard water to my tea makes a tremendous impact on my overall well-being. Willard water is tasteless and odorless. Dr. Willard's patented catalyst helps our bodies better absorb the minerals and nutrients we need to maintain optimal health. If you care about your health, you'll try Willard water today.
To learn more about the benefits of Willard water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
Linda Masterson, Soul Purpose Astrologer, works with astrological tools and with guides in the non-physical to assist ones in knowing their soul purpose. Important in this process is identification of significant blockages. In each session, tools are provided for working with self to clear resistance and free talents, skills, and abilities to fuller expression. The goal is to take responsibility for and to accelerate the healing process. Phone sessions are offered by Linda. Please visit Linda at lindamasterson.com or call 808-651-0307. Again, that's 808-651-0307.
And Trade Association. Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We're talking with Jim Gerritsen of Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association and the lawsuit they currently have against Monsanto. And it's been very interesting talking with you about it and what the goals are and the challenges that you faced. One question, when do you go to court next? What timeline are you working on now?
Well, what we've learned is that the legal process has its own speed, which is, you know, to those of us that farm and work at 100 miles an hour to get the crops planted and tended and harvested, and it's a different pace than what we're used to, but that's simply the nature of the legal system. So it can take quite a while, and we're expecting the process to once it goes on, you know, once we get into court and once we win the initial case, we expect that Monsanto will be appealing their loss. And then once we win at the appellate court, we expect that they will appeal it to the Supreme Court. So we're expecting the whole process to take 3 to 5 years. How long will it take to get to court now? It's anyone's guess. It really depends on how much delaying tactics that Monsanto wants to try to throw into the road. The fact is we're anxious to get to court. Every day that goes by is another opportunity for a family farmer to be contaminated and to be pursued for patent infringement by Monsanto. The sooner we can get this to court and get this remedied, the better. But it's... you know, the judge in our case is carrying several different court cases, so we're not the only one that she's having to deal with. And we do expect that there should be a ruling on the motion to dismiss here, you know, before too long, but we're not certain when that will be, and we certainly hope that by late winter or spring that this case will go to trial.
Okay, and we're well aware of the delay tactics that attorneys for major corporations take. So let me ask you, what can the general public do to support your effort? There are so many organizations and such an upswelling of people demanding that genetically modified food be labeled and to want to somehow ultimately stop, but in the meantime thwart Monsanto's continued progress because they've brought more seeds up to the FDA to be approved for other crops. What is there anything that the general public can do to support you in your efforts?
Oh, there always is. I'm a believer that in a democracy, we all have to be activists and we all have to put our energy into trying to make this the best country that we possibly can. So democracy is not an armchair occupation. So there are a lot of things that people can do. We've talked of the push now that is on for mandatory labeling of GMO crops, and there's a ballot initiative coming up in California. I believe it's next year, and there's going to be a lot of help needed with that in order to try to balance the millions of dollars that Monsanto and their fellow biotech companies are going to put into trying to defeat that. There's a need for contributions to help that effort out. part of what we're trying to do with our lawsuit effort is not just confined to the walls of the courtroom, but we're trying to help educate the public on GMO issues. And, you know, everyone that I've told my story to, they find it incredible that a farmer who wants nothing to do with GMO and is contaminated by Monsanto can then face the potentially bankrupting situation of having to defend themselves. So we're trying to get the word out, and I think the more people understand about the injustice of the current system, the more support that we're going to have for change. And I think if we can help to modify the climate of change in this country, and I think the Occupy movement has been a real blessing in that way. I think they're helping to expose that we have a system that is not working because of an overt control by corporations. So, in fact, some of us will be heading down to New York City this Sunday, December 4th. There's going to be the Occupy Wall Street people and the Food Justice Committee of Occupy Wall Street are organizing a farmers' march and rally, and I'll be going down there. I'll be speaking, trying to tell people in New York City and the media that's in attendance these same things that we've been talking about today about our lawsuit. But there's many issues of concern to rural people and to farmers that the mainstream media is not doing coverage of. Things like the Farm Bill, to where they tried to railroad this through as part of the super committee process, and now that seems to have hit a brick wall. But this is a democracy, and these kinds of policy issues should be discussed openly in committee format, as they always have, and there needs to be the opportunity for public input. But other issues such as consolidation within agriculture, not only within the seed industry, but within every aspect of agriculture, to where now the vast majority of pork, 85%, I think I read last week, 85% of pork in America is controlled by a small handful of corporations buying contracted production, a similarly high amount of chicken production. That kind of loss of market and consolidation of power works against family farmers and family ranchers, and that needs to change. GMO coverage, the mainstream media is not paying attention to that, yet Americans are ingesting this. We're feeding it to our families unknowingly. And, of course, our lawsuit, the mainstream media, we've actually received more coverage from some of the European press. We've been covered by Reuters and by the Financial Times of London, but to date, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the L.A. Times, the Chicago Tribune, they have not taken up this very important case, and one has to start to ask, why is that the case? So we're going to join with our allies and Occupy Wall Street and try
and
to bring the truth.
Can you tell us how people can find out about this rally? Is there anything on Facebook about this?
Yes, there is. If you Google Occupy Wall Street, Food Justice, or the New York City General Assembly, Occupy Wall Street, you'll have that. But the rally in March, if anyone is anywhere near New York City, we need as many people, farmers included, to come out to this march. And it will begin at 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, December 4th, and go till 6 o'clock that evening.
That's exciting. I think I agree with you. I think the Occupy movement has brought a lot of attention to the corporate corruption, and this includes our food supply.
It does. And there's nothing more more sensitive and more dear to a family than what they're feeding their family members. And somehow we need to break the stranglehold that big agriculture has on the food system. And I think the sentiments that of the 99% that the Occupy folks are trying to get out, that represents a real breath of fresh air. We've got a system that cannot continue as it is. We cannot continue with the corporate control over the system. And people have a right to freedom, and we need to live up to our ideals as a democracy.
Now, Jim, we've got about 3 minutes left. What else would you like to say to our listeners about getting involved and taking action and, as we say, get up off your couch?
Yeah. Well, you would ask, how can people help? One thing that you can do is go to the website, the pubpat.org website or the osgata.org website, and read the list of the 83 plaintiffs. See which organizations, like here in Maine, the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, they're a plaintiff. Fedco Seeds, one of the seed companies in the state of Maine, they're a plaintiff. These are organizations and seed companies that have put their reputation on the line. They're willing to stand up and fight for you as a consumer that values the freedom to eat organic food. So send them a letter. Let them know that you support their willingness to work in your behalf. And if you can afford to do it, these organizations all operate on a shoestring. And if you can send in contributions to help them, they will use those contributions to get the word out to other Americans so that we can get an engaged public dialogue of the food system and taking back our country from the corporations. And the GMOs is such an important issue. If we don't fight them now, the monopoly control of seed companies such as Monsanto and the contamination of seed which is not GMO is going to be it's of an unrecallable nature, and the contamination levels are going to be so high that there will not be the possibility of an alternative. If you have contaminated organic seed, there's no way to have a clean, organic food crop grown from that seed. So we have to start with the seed and protect it. We need to start with organic farms and convey the right that they have to be free from trespass and contamination by biotech, or for that matter, by the chemical industry as well. We have a right to farm on our farms and to grow the pure food that our customers want, without being intimidated through trespass and contamination. And that word needs to get out. So we're trying to do this action in the people's behalf. So let us know that you support us. If you can, give contributions to any of the plaintiffs that are working to get the word out. We've got a tremendous group of plaintiffs, of organizations and seed companies and individual farmers that are staking their reputation on trying to change the system, and give them the support they need, and we'll move forward, and we're all going to benefit if we do that.
And thank you very much. And one more important thing that people can do is do not buy genetically modified products.
Absolutely.
Go to the non-GMOproject.org or non-GMOshoppingguide.com. You can download a PDF. And it's very good about letting you know what products contain GMOs. If you're buying any processed food, you're buying GMOs. And, you know, we vote with our dollars, so don't buy their products.
And support organic, because organic, the reputable companies in organic are keeping GMOs out. We're doing testing to make sure that the contamination is not getting in. And those are the companies to where you want to spend your dollars to support a bright future for you and your family.
And once again, the two websites that people can go to are osgata.org. You can find out more about Jim's organization and the lawsuit. And to learn more about the patent issue, you can go to PubPat, that's PubPat.org. And Jim, thank you so much for being a guest on our show, and we applaud you for the work you're doing, and we'll follow this lawsuit, and perhaps as this progresses, we'd like to have you back on our show again.
I've enjoyed myself, and I would be happy to be back, and I thank you very much, Carol and Jean. This has been fun, and I'm glad to help get the word out. Thank you.
Okay. And know that on Sunday, our hearts and will be with you in spirit in New York City.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. And for our listeners, you can listen to this, spread the word. We will have it on our website, which is foodintegritynow.org. Once again, you can find us on Facebook at Food Integrity Now, and we thank you for listening.
Thank you.